or whatever other awful thing these deserter bastards can dream up for a man.
The soldier took the berating in stride.
And the third thing? He asked.
Mulders glanced at the wagon behind us as the captain got off his morgon and helped him back to his feet. Then he turned back to the tooth-deprived soldier.
You don't ever disobey a direct order from superior officer. You do, and an elbow to the ear is about the best thing you can plaguing hope for.
He didn't look at Bank when he said it, but Muldus did say it loud enough for everyone around us to hear. The deserter warriors pushed the human slaves out of the way, grabbed the chains, and started leading us out of our wagons, none too gently, striking some of us about the shoulders with the flat of their spiked hafts. They shouted at us as we jumped off the backs of the wagons onto the stones. We couldn't understand a word of it, but the warning was no less clear than the lieutenant's. Still, they felt the need to drive the point home. In the wagon behind us, a deserter was watching an injured Sildoon struggling out of the back, favoring what looked to be a broken or badly sprained leg. The deserter stepped up. A massive elbow shot out just as Braylar's had. Only when it struck this Sildoon in the temple, it sent him flying to the stones. And it was a blow there would be no getting up from. Blood dribbled out of the dead Sildoon's ear, and the deserter looked at his morgon and Braylar, still inside the wagon. And he click-laughed, then pulled the next soldier out. I was still staring at the corpse when a deserter's shadow fell over me, and he screamed something. Spittle flying down, and I got my feet moving instantly, walking towards the steps of an entrance to the overwhelmingly large palace or keep. They led us through a huge arched entrance and down a long corridor. There were enough deserter guards around that even Asmorgon wouldn't be foolish enough to try anything else. If the outside of the buildings in Roxtaniac had impressed me with the level of detailing in the facades and stone carving, wild whorls, scrollwork, and other stonecraft, the interior of the citadel was something else altogether. While it was just as devoid of color as the rest of the deserter buildings, there didn't seem to be a wall, panel, grotto, or doorframe that wasn't elaborately worked, sometimes with abstract designs, other times with incredibly detailed scenes of deserter life. Warriors clashing, legless humans sometimes in the barrels on their backs, robed female deserters with the spines sticking up above their shoulders, as well as others dressed in garb and in vignettes I couldn't discern the meaning of. The level and sophistication of carving was dizzying and perplexing. Did the deserters enjoy rubbing their hands over the artistry? They navigated just fine without walking sticks or guides and attacked the Sildoon without any obvious impediment, so they clearly possessed some ability to sense their surroundings. But could they appreciate such intricate stone and woodwork without the use of eyes? It seemed impossible. The scale of everything inside was also designed to accommodate our giant captors, and contributed to my feeling of being a disobedient child summoned to accept punishment from an angry adult. Well, if the punishment was exaction of limbs. We shuffled along, injured, exhausted, starving, foul-smelling, our chains clinking until we reached the end of the hall, and the deserters directed us up a huge flight of winding stone stairs. Luckily, the deserters had prepared the stairwell for human slaves as well, as there were sconces periodically, though not as many as if the humans had had a say in lighting the way, as it was very difficult to make out anything in the gloom and deep shadow. After several landings and entrances to new floors, I lost track of how many we passed. All I knew was the muscles in my legs were burning and cramping, and my breath was coming ragged and almost wheezing. The hardened Sildoon weren't showing the effects as much, accustomed to discomfort and pushing themselves to the limit as they were. But it was some small consolation that I heard lots of heavy breathing around me as well. Finally, we reached our destination, or at least floor, as the stairs continued up. But we were ushered through a large arched doorway and down another hall. My head was spinning, so my sense of direction, suspect on the best days, told me nothing about where we were headed. There were several more armed deserters towering above us as we were directed down the hall and through an open doorway. That was another architectural oddity, the lack of actual doors inside the building. Every human domicile I'd ever been in had doors, for privacy or security. But most rooms here had none. We walked through the doorway two at a time, and I had no idea what to expect. Were we being presented before some ruler? Sent to an interrogation room or cells of some kind? Unlikely without a door? Or something else? The interior didn't exactly answer the question, except for eliminating another possibility. There were no rulers to be seen. There was a series of interconnected rooms, all without doors, and it seemed they were quarters of some kind, though mostly empty. All that was left in most of them were human-sized sleeping mats, and a few woven screens here or there. Whatever chests or wardrobes or other usual furniture had once been housed here had been removed. The human slaves moved amongst us, unlocking our manacles, pulling the chains free. I saw Asmorgon rubbing his wrists and glaring at a slave as if he were considering backhanding him. But he managed to restrain himself. The deserter guards stood at the door while the slaves kept releasing us, making as little eye contact with the Sildoon as possible. We started moving off away from the door, looking into the other rooms connected with the main chamber. I had just stepped around a corner when the last Sildoon was enchained, and one of the hulking guards started yelling in their opaque tongue, miming as if he were removing his own armor. While they had stripped us of helms and weapons and taken bolts out of quivers, they hadn't bothered to take our armor until now. No Sildoon seemed in a hurry to remove their gear, and the deserter bellowed again, spittle flying off his thick, sallow lips. Braelar said,
"You hear our host. He wants us to be more comfortable. Everyone, be good guests, yes?"
Several muttered, and as Morgan went further,
"Plague that cap, ain't giving these bastards nothing, and none of you horse sons should neither."
Braelar nodded.
"As you will, Lieutenant. But for the rest of you who presumably want to live and not have your skulls caved in like Windsor in the yard, I suggest you do not test our host's patience."
He started unbuckling the straps on his splinted vambrace. Everyone else started doing the same. I ducked behind the wall for a moment, slid the strap of my writing case over my head, knelt down, and slid the brass case under a dirty sleeping pallet. Then I stepped back in the room as quickly as possible and started taking my gambeson off. When we were done, the slaves gathered our gear and nearly ran out of our barless prison. The deserters waited until all the slaves were gone, then turned and left the main entrance as well. As Sildoon set off to explore the extent of our limited quarters, Rudgie stared at the open doorway.
"Is this some kind of a trap, then? Leave the mice in a maze, wait until they try to leave, then smash them with a boot, or let a cat cut them?"
Vinduro replied,
"Least they could do is give the plaguing mice some cheese first."
Braelar walked over to us, face pale and drawn. His eyes nearly slits, and he seemed to be wobbling a little. Muldus asked,
"Glad to see you made it, Cap, though you kind of look like shit just now, if you don't mind me saying."
The captain replied,
"Now how could I mind that, Lieutenant? If you started doling out disingenuous compliments, now that would make me suspicious."
While he aimed for a jest, the strain in his voice and rigid posture belied that. I glanced at the hook on his belt. I'd never seen it empty unless he had Bloodsounder in hand. I lowered my voice. "Are you feeling the absence explicitly just now?" Braelar looked at me. He was clearly suffering, though not as with the barrage of stolen memories he usually had to contend with. He seemed as lucid as ever, only more pained than usual.
"That is one way of putting it, Arky. It is not as sharp as when my men buried the weapon miles behind us. The flail isn't nearly as distant. But yes, there are pangs. Explicit pangs."
Muldu said,
"Last thing I saw before we were captured was you still standing, fighting off the she-devil deserter."
Braylar pulled the gloves off his hands and stuffed them in a pouch.
Blood Sounder afforded me some measure of protection, it seems, though not so much as when Ruse Jenna attacked us. The deserter woman was far more powerful.
He looked around us, peered at the rooms where Sildoon stood, wondering what to do or say.
My sister. She is not among us, then?
Muldus declined to answer, maybe not trusting himself to hide any glee he felt. But Vinduro replied,
Nope, Cap. She went down when you did, from the sounds of it. Nobody's seen her since. What in the wagons?
The captain nodded slowly.
I thought not. Well.
There was some emotion threatening to rear up just then, but he gave it no opportunity.
Let us take stock, yes? How many have we lost?
Muldus and Vinduro looked at each other. The pale lieutenant said,
This is the first time we got all the men together again to take an accurate count. I'll get on it.
Do, Braylar replied. Get Esmorgon as well. Give that impulsive bastard something to do to occupy his...
We heard something behind us, and looked over to the doorway. One Sildoon was standing above another soldier lying on the floor, curled up, body quivering and quaking, eyes rolling back into his skull. It took me a moment to recognize that it was Bank, as his face was contorted into a rictus. Vinduro ran over to the soldier still standing.
What plaguing happened?
The Sildoon was still staring down at Bank, shaking his head.
He just looked is all.
Braylar approached as well.
Just looked at what?
He asked, already angry, as if he anticipated the answer. The soldier pointed at the door.
Weren't trying to leave, just wanted to peer out a little, of the door. But he never got there.
Muldus managed to growl and slur.
What do you plaguing mean he never plaguing got there?
We all watched Bank convulse another time, eyes still mostly white, as the soldier quietly said,
He was walking towards it, the door that is, and when he was 5 steps away, he flew back like he got hit with an invisible battering ram. Ain't such a thing, not saying it was that, only that's what...
Braylar raised his hand.
Yes, soldier, we understand. So he screamed and flew back. That is all?
That, what he's doing now, jerking around like that.
Vinduro knelt and held Bank in place until he finally stopped shaking and floundering, and his eyes came back down. He spit out some blood and saliva and looked up at us, confused, angry, and scared. He shook off Vindura's hands.
What?
Guess that answers the question about the trap, Reggie said.
Quite. Braylar replied.
Muldus looked down at Bank and shook his head.
Guessing you didn't hear a plaguing thing in the wagon, did you? No play without Cap say, you dumb fuck.
Bank got up into a sitting position, still shaky and weak, eyes unfocused.
I was just looking is all, investigating like, just... That's it, all I was doing.
Vinduro stood up and asked,
What happened to you?
Bank stared at the doorway as if it were an animal that attacked him.
Walked towards it a bit is all. Then, it was like every light and sound in the world hit me at once. Don't remember nothing else.
Wasn't much else to remember, you prick, Muldoon said. Except you nearly biting your tongue in half as you jerked around like a fish on a dock.
Bank rubbed his head.
Hurts. Bad.
Good, Muldoon said. Plaguing good.
Bank looked at the captain, voice somewhere between pitiful and plaintive.
Just trying to help, nothing more. Can't blame a man for that, just...
Muldoon said.
You ever been taking a shit? And it's lodged in there good, and you push and your ass makes an awful squeaky noise right before things work themselves out? That's what you sound like right now, Bank. A whiny, annoying shit. Shut your mouth.
Braylor looked at his lieutenant. So, take stock, and also tell the men to stay well away from the door. Muldus and Venduro nodded and set off into adjacent rooms, and the captain started walking away, with me in tow. When we were far enough away not to be heard, I asked, "What do you think they intend to do with us?" Braylar pressed his lips tight and closed his eyes for a moment, and tremors rolled over his eyelids and seemed to find a path down his cheek. The captain clenched his jaw and waited it out until whatever ailed him passed or lessened. Then he opened his eyes again and said, "I have no idea, and even if I concocted a notion, it would likely be proven wrong. So we will simply wait and see. They didn't summarily execute us as they could have, so that could bode well, or it could be they are only saving us for something worse. We cannot know until they make their intentions clear. But until then, I intend to do my best not to fall over racked with pain as we assess and try to formulate a plan of some kind." He walked towards the other rooms, arms crossed at the wrists behind his back, head down slightly, bowed under unseen and immeasurable weight. I wasn't sure what would prove more of a burden or torture, the presence of stolen memories that ordinarily afflicted him, or the absence of the weapon itself that he contended with now. When it was clear the deserters weren't coming back, I pulled my writing case out from under the pallet, cracked it open, and recorded the awful events of our capture. When I was done, I walked into some of the other mostly empty rooms, moving through them, drawn forward by the distant sounds of the city of Roxtiniac. While it was an alien place to be sure, perplexing and foreign and disturbing, there were still voices, shouts, what sounded like curses, and the rolling wheels of gigantic cairns pulled by rooters. It suddenly hit me that I had no idea what became of our horses. Would they kill them? Eat them? Given the reaction the humans in this land had to the beasts, I doubted they had simply set them free, and they certainly weren't going to ride them. I felt guilty I hadn't stopped to think of it before. While I hadn't spent my life around the creatures, or formed any kind of bond the way these jackals had with their own mounts, being crossbow cavalry for the most part, I had grown to appreciate the animals in my short time, saddle sores and all. I even looked forward to those moments of brushing my own horse, caring for her. They were beautiful, strong, smart beasts. If the deserters had killed them off, I was glad I at least hadn't seen it. Sighing, I looked out the window. Unlike the door, the windows were barred, so I didn't think I would set off a trap like Benk had, but still held my breath as I got closer. Not being thrown across the room, I peered out. Given the construction with the upper floors extending out slightly more than the ones below, even if there weren't bars, it would be impossible to scale the walls down, especially without a rope or any kind of tools. The city view was breathtaking, though, even more so than the view of Sunrak from the height of the Jackal Tower. But as I surveyed the oddly shaped and asymmetrical buildings around the city, something arrested my attention unlike anything else. I'd caught a glimpse of it from the ground level, but now with this vantage point, I saw it clearly. There was a small quadrant of smaller dwellings, mostly walled off from the rest of Roxtiniac. Even with the sun setting somewhere beyond the city's veil, the colors of this little sector were awesome to behold. Garish, outlandish, brighter than any dwellings I'd even seen, and undeniably human. They might have been slaves, but they seemed to delight in expressing themselves in the one way that couldn't possibly offend their eyeless masters. While the deserters had a way of sensing their surroundings I couldn't fathom, they clearly couldn't see the color of anything. In the extraordinarily muted and neutral tones of the rest of the city, this riot of color was the greatest silent protest I'd ever seen. I heard someone approaching and turned. Venduro said, "There you are. Thought she must have been off roping the unicorn again." I started to protest, and he chuckled and hit me in the arm. "Plague me, Arky, but you're tighter than a priest's bunghole sometimes. It might actually do you some good if you let off some of that pent up."
whatever it is you got pent up, and took matters into your own hands. Hand, anyway.
He laughed at his own joke, and I couldn't help smiling. Then he turned to go, took a few steps before stopping and looking back at me.
Well, come on then. Didn't think I came out here just to harass you, did you? Cap wants us.
I followed him through the rooms I'd seen, passing several with Sildoon reclining against the walls, staring vacantly ahead or with their heads resting on their knees. Curiously, none had fallen into the cots that filled most of the rooms. Perhaps the captain had ordered them not to, or possibly they didn't trust that gesture as benign or truly generous. We turned and moved off through an open doorway that led to another suite of rooms, and I noticed the rumbling sound of rushing water was louder here. A few rooms later, Venduro and I joined the captain, Muldus, Asmorgon, Benk, and Rudgie. My stomach twisted as it hit me anew that Hughspear was going to forever be absent from the captain's council. The group was facing a broad, open but barred window, silent, looking out at whatever lay beyond. As I settled in line next to Venduro, I witnessed something that made the colorful human commune seem completely insignificant. The deserter palace was in the shape of a ring, and was so large it was difficult to imagine how long it would have taken them to construct it. That alone would have been impressive, as it dwarfed even the most magnificent of human dwellings. But what lay in the expanse in the middle was so utterly unlike anything I'd ever witnessed, it was impossible to even understand it at first, or believe my eyes weren't betraying me. At the base of the palace, there was a broad lake surrounded by a wide strip filled with more of the spiked columns and other foliage and footpaths. But it was the lake itself that drew the eye immediately and revealed what the odd watery noise was. In the middle of the lake, there appeared to be a giant drain of some sort, 50 yards across. It was as if a round waterfall occupied the center. The water ran over the edge of what must have been a deep, circular cliff of some kind. Though I couldn't see how deep it went down, even from this height and vantage point, as the rushing water disappeared in mist and spray in the drain. I stared, shook my head, and turned to Venduro. That's impossible, isn't it? I mean, if a river goes over a waterfall, the water is replenished from the source, but this... it's a lake. Impossible. Muldus replied,
Impossible is something that can exist, right, Scribbler? Seems like this queer lake is mighty strange, but it sure as hell exists, don't it?
I couldn't take my eyes off the water disappearing into the huge drain in the center. Fine. Clearly it does exist. But have you ever seen anything like this, then? He didn't reply right away, and so I added, Anyone? Because real or not, such a thing shouldn't be possible. Venduro offered,
Kind of like a fountain, ain't it? How does a fountain plaguing work?
It is like one, I admitted, only 10,000 times larger, and not man-made, or deserter-made. It is a lake.
Right you are. Still want to know how a fountain works, though?
Muldus shook his head.
Your head is a plaguing fountain.
Braelar leaned against the small stone window ledge, eyes fixed on the bizarre lake as it emptied into itself without running dry, the crashing water a dull roar in the background.
We are in the land of the deserters. Whatever these beings are, we do not know what they are capable of, or what sorcery or sophisticated engineering unknown to us they possess or employ. Perhaps they have shaped the land, or created this themselves, or perhaps it simply is. There is no telling what exists or does not on this side of the Godvale, or why.
He stepped away from the window and walked towards the opposite wall as we all started following.
And what needs concern us just now is trying to understand our captors as quickly as possible, and figuring out the best strategy to getting out of this.
Muldu said,
Ogre, why don't you try just walking out the front door? Maybe Benk cleared the way for you.
as Morgan glared at him.
Yeah, real plaguing funny. Plaguing hilarious you are, you squinty little fuck,
Reggie said.
Who knows? Maybe if he got to running first, you could...
Shut your hole, she-cunt,
as Morgan rumbled.
Vindero said, On account of a lady having lady bits, and Reggie there being a lady, the she is redundant.
I'm no lady, Ven, but you're right about the redundancy. It is pretty plaguing redundant.
As Morgan glowered down at both of them.
The whole lot of you, plaguing riotous. But now that squirrel's been elevated, these two bastards are my peers. You, though.
He jabbed a huge finger into Reggie's collarbone, knocking her back a step.
You don't watch that stupid tongue of yours, you'll be cleaning my chamber pot for weeks. Just see if you don't. Maybe with your stupid tongue, even. Cleaning it with your tongue. How's that sound, you lippy little she-cunt?
He caught himself.
Regular cunt. Whatever I plaguing feel like calling you.
He looked around, daring anyone to correct him. I never thought it possible, but as Morgan really did make Muldew seem like an erudite orator. Braelar appeared to be ignoring the entire exchange, eyes fixed on the lake that really shouldn't have been a lake. But when a Sildoon came running over to the window, the captain spun around, hand reaching for Bloodsounder, even though the flail was nowhere near. The soldier said,
Your sister, Cap. She's alive. Well, mostly.
He turned and moved at a quick walk towards the main entrance to the quarters, and we all followed. When we got to the main common room and the arched doorway, Sofjian was on her hands and knees about 8 paces into the room, and 2 deserters were standing behind, surveying the Sildoon around them. They each had their spiked hafts in hand, though not immediately threatening, held relaxed at their sides, and they stood there, towering over the unarmed humans as if challenging them to bull-rush the pair. None did, of course, so the deserters turned nonchalantly and strode out. Sofjin tried to get to her feet and fell, barely catching herself before slamming her head on the stone floor. She was far enough inside the room that she didn't set off the trigger near the doorway, but no one was in a hurry to go assist her, just the same. Several of the soldiers looked around, and a few muttered. Finally, Braelar walked forward until he stood next to his sister. Sofjin could barely raise her head, but either recognized his boots or gait as she slurred.
Well, seems roles are reversed a bit. Must be fantastic for you.
Then she collapsed. Braelar knelt down and rolled her onto her back. She didn't seem to have any bruises or contusions of any kind. No noticeable wounds. The captain lifted her torso off the stones and then called out,
Vindoro, give me a hand. Let's get to a cot, yes?
Vindoro ran up and they hoisted her to her feet, one arm over each of their shoulders, and lifted her limp weight off the ground enough to carry her into the closest room with bedrolls. I watched them disappear around the corner. It was disturbing enough to see Braelar succumb to Bloodsounder, or Muldus and Hughspear laid low by Memrodons. But to see Sofjian, a powerful Memrodon in her own right, overcome so easily by the deserter witch, well, that was truly frightening. At least she was still alive. For now, anyway. That was something. Reggie was standing nearby and looked at me.
What do you suppose they did to her? And why did they keep her singled out like that this whole time?
I shook my head. I can't say. Interrogated her? Tortured her? Toyed with her? They are a totally foreign species. It's impossible to know until she can confirm anything.
Well, that's real uplifting.
You did ask, but I'm only guessing. Reggie was still looking at the room they'd taken her to as the rest of the Sildoon dispersed.
Didn't have a mark on her, though, did she? You saw that, I'm guessing. Or didn't, as it were. You know what I mean.
I do, I replied.
And you're right. It didn't appear that they physically hurt her.
So, do you suppose they must have used the same sort of witchery on her she uses herself?
Something like that. I turned and looked at her, noticing for the first time that she was the same height as I was. Her dark eyes were startlingly earnest. There was no mockery there, no mischief that I could see, no hint of anything but pure curiosity.
I can't say for certain, Reggie, but on account of not being witness to what they did, and not being a deserter, and not a bunch of other things, I got it. But I'm asking you to suppose with me. What do you suppose?
I suppose they were exploring her memories, her mind. They probably saw that she had some defenses against their sorcery, and put up the best fight. And I suppose that would make them very curious.
Reggie nodded twice and looked back to the room. That's roughly what I was supposing myself. I sort of feel like I ought to be glad, on account of the damage she's doled out. Kind of a cruel sort of justice. But then again, she's Cap Sis. And what's more, he needs her, it seems like. Though what for, exactly, is hard to say, isn't it? Cap's never real forthcoming about the particulars, is he?
I didn't answer right away, as it hit me that the rank-and-file jackals didn't likely know the full scope of what Braelar or their tower commander intended for them, or how or why Sofjian was accompanying us at all.
It is hard to say, I replied,
and before she could ask anything else, added, excuse me. I walked away, though now with the scrolls gone, I had no real pretense for needing to have any space to myself. Still, better than deflecting questions or revealing more than I ought to. It was a very odd feeling to possess more knowledge of our purpose than most of the people around me, when the reverse had been true for so long. I would have reveled in that notion more if we hadn't been trapped in a prison without bars by a giant race who could march through that open door any moment to kill us, or shred our minds, or toss us in Lake Drain, or whatever else they felt like doing. Being in the know for once brought no pleasure at all. That hardly seemed fair, as the opportunity to enjoy that position might never come again. Chapter 18. The captain kept close counsel with his lieutenants and occasionally sergeants, waiting for his sister to wake, or arguing over potential plans, or doing who knew what. Without translation to occupy my time, after recording a bit more, I didn't know what to do with myself. And without weapons, I couldn't even ask Muldus for any more welt-filled lessons on how to wield one. The Sildoon seemed just as restless, having no chores, drills, preparations, or reconnaissance to occupy them. I overheard some grumbling quietly to each other, though they always quieted whenever I came near. But we were all in the same position, nothing for it but to wait, at least for the moment. So I took a cot as far from everyone as I could manage, and laid back, my mind buzzing with how unreal it all seemed, being a prisoner in a deserter city on the other side of the veil. And before I knew it, I fell into a sleep. A depthless, dreamless sleep like the dead, as it happened. Much more soundly than I could have possibly imagined, though abbreviated. I woke sometime in the middle of the night to the sounds of dozens of snores of varying patterns around me, disoriented, in the dark, and it took me a moment to remember where I was. My bladder was full to bursting, so I carefully got out of my cot and made my way to the nearest chamber pot that our captors had provided, scattered in the corners of rooms. It sounded like a furious storm when I released, and I was certain I would wake someone, but if I did, no one gave a sign. I considered heading back to my cot, not knowing how many hours of night might be left. But now alert and roused, I knew I'd only lie there staring up into the black, mind whirling and spinning itself silly, and likely unable to fall back asleep anytime soon. So I shuffled out of the room,
moving slowly and carefully to avoid waking anyone around me, and biting my lip to avoid yelping when I banged my toes on the doorframe leaving the chamber. I wasn't sure exactly where I intended to go, but my feet had their own ideas, and I found myself drifting towards the dull roar of rushing water. It was a miracle that didn't have everyone running to the chamber pots 12 times a night. A small breeze was blowing, dry, cool, and I looked down at the lake that should not have existed, constantly running into its own drain in the center. While I couldn't see much below, I looked up through the hole in Veil Dome to see that the horned moon occasionally broke free from a cloud bank and threw a flash of silver on the water that was constantly flowing away from the shore in the most unnatural fashion possible. I heard a voice behind me.
Sleep, elusive as a ghost, plaintive as a widow, and as easy to hold as the wind.
I turned around as Captain Kilcoin stepped up alongside me.
It is good to see I am not the only one so plagued.
He sounded exceptionally tired, and not a little far away, as if he were talking more to himself or a phantom, and expected no reply. Captain, you should try to get some rest. Braelar turned towards me, though the clouds had conspired against the moon again, and I could see little of his face and nothing of his expression.
Should I, truly? I hadn't considered it before, but you very well might be onto something. Shocking that no one else has thought to suggest it to me.
He spoke with a surplus of sarcasm, and the rebuke was only barely below the surface. That is, I only mean, since... He waved a hand.
Oh, desist. I know what you meant, and why. Believe you me, if it were possible, I would be doing it. But it is precisely the pain I'm experiencing just now that makes it untenable. Bloodsounder's absence burns. Burns fiercely, Arky. The cursed thing torments me whether I wield it or not, and the pain is like a wound that has gone sour, but inside my body, a sickly flame that spreads and consumes.
We sat there in silence for a bit, both of us watching the rushing water, listening to the cascade and spray as it flew down its own peculiar well. Finally, I asked, quietly, "And has there been any change? With Sofjian, I mean." If he looked in my direction, I couldn't see it.
"You have such concern for my entire bloodline. Incredibly touching."
It lacked some of its usual sting, though, being less pointed, and more a rebuttal by rote than driven by any passion or innate irascibility. So I pressed on. "She is still out of it, then?" I expected that to raise his ire, and I was ready for it, but instead he only exhaled slowly and said,
"She is the same, yes."
Braelar said nothing else, so I dropped the subject, and was weighing whether to ask about anything else now that I had his undivided attention, or to return to my cot and resume sleepless staring, when he abruptly said,
"You asked once what was the true cause of the rift betwixt us, which I rightfully silenced you about. But you guessed correctly at the time. It wasn't simply my inability to kill our father's murderer that sits between us like a poisonous puddle. That was the start of it. But only just the start."
I said. I asked her what the origin of the rift was. She told me you were, though she admitted some culpability in failing to help you avenge the murder. That seemed to simultaneously agitate and amuse the captain.
"Did she now? And what else did she tell you then?"
Finally, there was the telltale edge to his voice, but still muted.
"Somewhat."
"Nothing, really."
"Nothing, really? Or really nothing?"
He was looking at me, and his face might as well have been obscured by the mail drape of his helm, for all it told me in the dark. "She said the two of you conspired to bring down the murderer, but stopped there, and said that if I was ever curious, I should risk your wrath by asking you myself. she'd say no more about it. He thought about that for a moment before replying. Curious. I would have expected her to take the opportunity to spew all manner of truths. More damning than lies in this case, as it happens. So, I know you tried to kill your father's killer and failed, but I don't know the particulars.
Nor shall you, he replied. They are pointless to rehash. I will tell you only this. Sofjin had no intention of leaving me to carry out the deed myself. She simply didn't trust me to do it successfully.
And by your laws, she couldn't do it herself.
Yes, that is correct. But that didn't stop her from concocting strategy and assisting in carrying it out. It was a foolish enterprise underpinned by a short-sighted plan carried out by idiot children. Failure was a foregone conclusion.
What was the plan?
I do sometimes admire your quiet relentlessness. Sometimes.
I said, but not now?
Not especially.
Should I stop?
Will you stop? Unless I gag you, I suspect not. But you should know enough by now to be sure that gagging someone will trouble my conscience not at all.
I knew that to be true, but pressed on anyway. So you tried to murder the Sildoon murderer, and failed? What happened?
You know about the choosings, yes?
When the Sildoon recruiters choose candidates from among far-flung tribes?
Yes. Well, the Sildoon are insurmountably stubborn at times, and the jackals more so than most towers. This outfit insisted on meeting my people for the choosing, as if murdering the chieftain's brother and nearly doing the chieftain in himself as he sought vengeance was no deterrent whatsoever.
But your priests, they must have objected.
Oh, certainly, Braylar replied. My sister and I were counting on that, you see. As I hid in the woods nearby, Earth Priest Grubar and Sun Priest Hordeman marched out to parley with the jackals, to demand justice, in truth. They ordered the Sildoon captain to turn the murderer over to them, so he might be tried by our laws.
I chuckled. I'm sure the jackals were really receptive to that. He might have laughed, though it was short and hard to hear above the distant roar of water.
Astute. The captain insisted the murderer would be tried according to Sildoon law, and none other. They continued shouting, as the Sildoon soldiers and Orlu looked on, weapons at the ready. But no one especially eager to bloody them. The Sildoon were greatly outnumbered. But the priests knew that if they slaughtered this platoon, the wrath of the Empire would fall on them, and their own doom would be sealed.
And so you did what, exactly?
I stepped into the open, out of the tree line where I'd been watching, waiting, my head and heart filling with these swollen ambitions, my blood pumping like a war drum. For a moment, and for the first time in my life, I felt powerful. I was not meekly following my sister. I was not continuing my father's weakness and passivity. I was powerful. A part of me began to hope that my sister didn't interfere as we planned. It was a small part, and undoubtedly crazed, but part of me felt as if I could actually beat this soldier, strike him down with a sword in my hand.
Sword? I asked. Wait, you didn't have one of your own, did you?
No. But do you suppose there was only one blade on the island? It was my father's, if you must know. I stole it before he was put in the ground.
I see. And so you marched out to do, what, slay the murderer in front of an entire Sildoon company?
Braylar leaned over further, holding tightly to the bars. I walked onto the grass and towards their line, towards the murderer. Their captain had not rejoined them yet. His back to me, occupied as he was with the priests of my tribe. But many of their soldiers saw me. How could they not? A lone figure, walking across the grass, bearing a sword. They saw me, and I knew that my own people could see me as well. There were shouts from both sides. The captain turned to see what his soldiers saw, and he smiled, hands on his hips. And then I heard laughter, snickers, and suddenly,
I no longer felt powerful. In fact, I suddenly felt like revenge and redemption were overrated. But I told myself that this is what we had planned for, Soph and I. We had anticipated their reaction, and would turn it to our advantage. I still don't understand. I expected you might try to slip into their camp, catch them unawares or something. Surely you didn't think this plan was going to work. Did you? He gave a tired shrug.
We were foolish children, Arki. Yes. In fact, we did imagine our plan was going to work, as Sofjin had engineered most of it, and as I had most of my life to that point, I trusted her implicitly. We were counting on them not expecting this at all.
Well, I imagine you nailed that true.
Yes. Now, would you like to use your extensive imagination as to how the rest of it played out, or shall I continue?
I nodded, and then when it was clear he might not have seen me, I said, "Please continue."
"Many thanks," he replied, laden with sarcasm. As I closed the last few paces, the captain lifted a hand to silence his troops, and he spoke to me. There was no doubt about the smiling now. He said, "Little man, why do you come to us so armed and battle-ready? We are about to hold a choosing, and this is a peaceful affair."
I said, "May I ask one more thing?" I felt Braelar's glare more than saw it.
"If you must."
"I noticed before, when you were talking to Ven and me about your father's burial preparations, that you seemed to recall words spoken decades ago by Earth Priest Grubar as if you heard them just yesterday. I wasn't sure if Bloodsounder had somehow made your memory sharper, in relief, or..."
"What, me playing fast and loose to capture the spirit of how things actually happened?"
"Yes, something like that." He snickered.
"Unfortunately, that cursed flail has gifted me with an unnatural memory nearly as potent as a Memrodon's. So as much as I would like to forget the awful moments of my life, they remain clear and precise."
"Anything else, then?"
I shook my head, and he must have seen that much, as he continued. "I wasn't sure if I should respond to the captain. I didn't know if I had courage for many words, and I hadn't rehearsed any for him, so I saved them. I took 4 steps and stood before the murderer."
"No one stopped you?"
"No one stopped me," he said. "They saw a scrawny youth who was more comical than threatening. They no doubt were curious what I intended. My father's killer was clearly a dullard, because no recognition was etched on his face. He was shorter than I remembered, and with his hands bound, he didn't seem so fierce or brutal. I held the sword in front of me, with both hands, and addressed him, praying I would get the words right and that I had the strength for all of them. 5 days ago, at a sanctuary, you struck down and murdered my father. I was there. I was witness. I am here today to claim the vengeance that is mine by custom and law. I challenge you to a duel."
I shook my head. "That was your plan? Challenging a trained killer to a duel?" The captain ignored me.
It took a moment for the words to register, but when they did, they were met with hooting laughter. It took the dullard an additional moment or two, but then he seemed to find the humor as well. Even with my confidence aswirl, even though we had hoped for such a reaction, this still infuriated me. I didn't feel powerful, but I felt a surge of anger, and I knew it would be enough to carry me through. I didn't take my eyes off the murderer, but I sensed the captain walk closer to me. He said, loud enough for all his troops to hear, "Vengeance is a heavy task, little man. You might consider waiting a few years. Why don't you come back to us when you have some stubble on your chin?" I did face him then, and though I hadn't planned to speak to him, my rage emboldened me. "I'm here now. I claim it now. Or is he such a coward who would only face old, unarmed men?"
The murderer took a step towards me, but two of the other soldiers restrained him. The captain spoke in Orlu for all to hear. You declare a duel with one breath and call the man a coward with the next. You are an amazing boy. He called out to his troops, though his eyes did not leave mine. There is a reason we take their children. There will be fewer to grow up and kill us. And then he said something in Sildunian. He directed his next words to me in my tongue. You are brave, little man, but you are misguided. Your father was not murdered, and there was no vengeance to. But I surprised both of us by interrupting with an emphatic,
Liar!
He said this loudly, as if he were speaking to this captain again, rather than his archivist, and I was worried he was going to wake some nearby soldiers. Braelar continued.
I called him a liar again, and then said, Did you ask the Lemon Man? Did you? He saw it. I saw it. My father did nothing. Nothing. And he killed him. Your soldier there, he killed him.
The captain still smiled, but he seemed infinitely less amused.
Called a liar to my face, twice in one day. You are an incredible people, truly.
He looked over my shoulder. But if I cannot convince you to stay your blade today, perhaps one of them will. I looked over my shoulder as well, at the three priests closing, and panic began to well up in me. An exchange with the captain was not part of the plan. Sofjian taking this long to loose an arrow was not part of the plan. And I suddenly felt small and ill-suited to this task. But it was too late to go back to the trees. Hrodomin was shouting at me to return to our lines. This was no place for a boy. A hand fell on my shoulder, sweaty and heavy. And I turned. A Sildun soldier was standing before me, his helmeted head towering above me. He said,
Give us the blade, boy. It's over.
His beard was like a stiff brush, and his breath reeked of eels. I had no more time to think this through. I simply reacted. I lowered the sword as if I were about to hand it to him. He released my shoulder, and when he did, I took a swing at him. Were you really trying to cut him, or? He replied,
I was trying to get space, which I got. He stepped back and I darted past. Before anyone could do anything, I moved in and thrust the sword at the murderer's belly, just as he had done with my father. He saw me coming and tried to retreat, but bumped into the soldier behind him. Trapped, he raised his bound arms and blocked the blow. I stabbed him in the forearm. He jerked his arms away, and I stabbed again, this time hitting him in the chest. And while I was but a lad, I felt it slide in several inches.
I asked, You'd never attacked anyone before, had you? What? How did it feel? He gave me a long look, lost in shadow.
I expect you know the answer to that now, Arki.
Just as it had during Sanctuary when my father was killed, time seemed to freeze. I was 2 feet from this man, could see his eyes, his mouth, just as he had seen my father's. There was shock and pain there. His mouth was open, his shoulders were rolled forward. But when time began to move again, the similarity ended. He did not collapse immediately as my father had. The murderer bent forward and grabbed at the sword with his bound hands, wrapping both of them around the blade. Even though this was an incident that happened decades ago, and Braelar obviously survived, I still felt my pulse quicken. What did you do?
Instinctively, I tried to pull it away, out of his body, away from his hands. But I'd caught the blade on a rib. My father's sword was stuck fast, and I couldn't wrench it free. I grabbed the hilt with my right hand and pulled again. But it was stuck fast. Seeing the soldiers stepping forward to stop me, I did the only other thing I could think of.
You ran.
I pushed. Hard, he said. With both hands and all my weight, and the murderer screamed. I pulled again, digging my heels in. The blade slid towards me, stuck again on the same rib, and then, with one more heave, came free, sliding out of his chest and slicing his other hand almost to the bone. The bastard screamed again, shrill this time, and doubled over. Blood from his chest and hand pouring down the front of his trousers. I stepped back, looked at him, looked at the sword in my hand, and for that moment, it was as if we were alone, alone in the world, just the bleeding murderer and me. I didn't hear anything. There was movement all around, on the periphery, but none of it registered, or mattered. Not at that instant. I had stabbed a man, sawed at his insides, slashed his hand almost in two, and I wanted nothing more that moment than to stand there and watch him, to see what feelings would develop in my chest. Pleasure? Hatred? Disgust? Bloodlust? But I shook it off, knowing every instant was precious, and turned to run.
You said something about Sofchin shooting a bow, for distraction, I assumed. I'm guessing she must have, or you would have been struck down or captured already.
How remarkably perceptive. You must be a scholar of some kind, Braelar said. I turned to flee and almost ran right into a spear. A soldier was ready to skewer me, and had I been an instant slower, I would not be relating this to you now. But I turned in time, and by blind reflex alone, managed to sidestep the thrust. He drew the spear back to thrust again, but then he spun, his torso whipping around before his legs could respond. He turned to face whoever struck him, and I saw an arrow sticking in his shoulder, just outside his scale cuirass, a small circle of red growing around the shaft. And it was then that I heard the noises around me, the sound of feet and hooves on the ground, men shouting orders, the hum of another arrow. It was then, too, that I noticed that there were already two arrows in the ground, one on either side of the murderer, who was now starting to stagger in small circles. Another arrow flew over my head, missing by only a foot or two, and, foolishly, instinctively, I turned to see where this last one was heading. There was a soldier behind me, clutching his thigh, the arrow sticking out between his fingers, its white feathers bright in the sun.
So that was your plan? You would attack him while she shot enough arrows for you to escape in the confusion?
He paused, and I could only imagine the twitching going on there, but then heard humor in his voice. She took longer than I expected. But yes, she was finally doing her part to help me escape. And so I ran as hard as I could, knowing I was running for my life. Knowing I might have waited too long with all that sword sawing. I flew past a soldier who was on one knee, his shield in front of him facing the woods where the arrows were coming from. He saw me and shouted, as if anything he could say would make me stop. Another soldier turned away from the woods, took a few steps to cut me off, a broadsword drawn, shield slung on his back. I started to change direction, but it turned out not to be necessary. An arrow skidded off the top of his helm, shearing the feather plume as it went, and the soldier dove to the ground, rolling out of my way. There were a few soldiers on either side, but no one in front of me. All I had to do was pump my legs and make it to the trees before I got cut down. I pushed harder, trying desperately not to slice something off with my father's blade, and I was suddenly sure I was going to make it. I was too fast. They would never catch me. Not so long as Sof kept shooting. I'd done it. I'd stabbed the murderer, watched his blood gush, and now I was going to sprint to freedom. I started to laugh, the laugh of a man who has faced demons or death and won. My joy was short-lived indeed, however, he said. One moment I was running full speed, the next I was flying, my feet taken out from beneath me. The ground rising up to smash me, plugging my mouth and eyes with dirt. and then I felt it, an awful pain across my left shin.